Okay, guys.
Oh, perfect.
Are we recording? Is this part going to be on the air?
We're not doing that dick move. Hi, everybody, and welcome to Sneaky Dragon, our 200th episode. We're recording our 200th episode way in the past. But we may air it early. So it's our 200th episode, special episode. Great. I'm Ian Boothby.
I'm David Dedrick.
And we have a special guest all the way from the Americas.
Oh.
He is a cartoonist, one of my favorite cartoonists. You know, I don't mind saying that. Also the co-host of the Ink Panthers show. Welcome to Sneaky Dragon, Mr. Alex Robinson.
Hello, hey, guys. Alex. It's me, Alex Robinson.
Hey, everybody. Alex Robinson's here.
Joining us by the magic of Skype. Which means sometime during the show, he'll drop out or the call will disconnect and we'll have to call him back.
Yes, I'm doing air quotes now, but yes, the call will disconnect.
We usually let our guests do a half hour monologue to start off. So I think Dave has mentioned that to you. So just the floor is yours for a half hour. And Dave and I are going to go get a coffee.
My topic this week is
the what?
Is juice, I think.
Juice. Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Different flavors.
Yes.
Different flavors of juice that they have in America that we do not have.
O.J. Simpson. So you're going to talk about for half an hour?
Wow, this is controversial material.
Already.
I didn't know this was you guys did one of these kind of shows.
Next,
UFOs, real or not?
I was telling Dave a little while ago. I had a guy come up to me. Well, not come up to me. I was at a supermarket, and he explained a UFO encounter that he had. And but the UFO encounter that he had clearly was a fairy, because it was a UFO, an alien who came from behind his TV with a stick, walked up to him, tapped him on the forehead, and he went unconscious for 6 hours. Which does not sound like the kind of thing an alien does. That sounds like something a fairy does.
I think that sounds like something a heroin addict does with a crowbar.
That could also be true. But yeah, enough of it.
I think the guy fell asleep in front of the TV and someone was breaking into his house.
Yes, exactly.
That is that is the better theory. I'll give you that. So you've been away for a while from the podcast airwaves? I don't know what they call them.
Wait, can I get back to the UFOs for a second?
Listen, we can go the whole damn show with UFO talk if you want. Go ahead, please.
I had a teacher at SVA who... it was a comics class, and this was a probably a cartoonist. He's not very well known today, but he was just kind of like a journeyman sort of average cartoonist. Anyway, the point is that I was one of the few people who paid attention in his class, and at one point he took me aside in class and was like, I wanted to talk with you about UFOs. And then he started telling me about how he had seen a UFO, and he was really hardcore into UFOs.
Wow.
And then I was like, and then he kind of got was like disappointed in me that I was skeptical.
Yes.
That I didn't go, he was opening up to me about his belief in UFOs, and then I was like, whoa, dude, I like girls. I don't know what you're talking about.
wait, is that the option? You can either be gay, straight, or UFO.
Yeah. Now you know. Yeah.
Wow, that would be so LGBT UFO. Yeah. Okay, that's how it goes now.
Now you know.
Now
that's the worst experience. You bring that up. That is the worst experience when you get to know someone a little bit and then they open themselves up for you and it's horrible.
Yeah.
Like I remember this time, these people, they're really nice. They invited me over for dinner. So I went there because I was starving to death. This was in Alberta. And so I went there and had pancakes for dinner. And as I was leaving, they gave me this book that was the most anti-Catholic thing I've ever read. It was the most horrible screed you could ever give someone. It was written by Jack T. Chick, just to give you a sense of how terrible it was.
Wait, and was that your instructor in the school, by the way, Jack T. Chick? I'm trying to guess who this cartoonist was.
The well-known journeyman Jack T. Chick. It wasn't a cartoon, though. It was just like it was a written book talking about their role in the Holocaust and all this horrible stuff. And it just seems so disappointing to discover this about them. Don't open yourself up to me. I don't want to see this part of you.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Let me just say the more disappointing thing to me is that someone in Alberta invited you for dinner and served you pancakes.
Yes.
The hell is that about?
I don't think they were well off. They're just being hospitable.
Cows just wander into your home to be slaughtered in Alberta. There's beef everywhere.
Yeah.
The newspapers are printed on beef.
Yeah, I didn't know if that was like a Canadian reference, but you're like, I was really hungry. It was in Alberta. Like, we all know what goes on in Alberta. Yeah. I was like, I get some cultural reference out of
it. And well, I was like, pancakes? Is it Shrove Tuesday already? Fancy.
I've talked a few times about my experiences selling encyclopedias door-to-door in Alberta, which it mostly involves starving to death. So that was one of my many, many encounters with the public.
Yeah, and Dave was a pancake grifter. He would somehow work his way into your home and just go, I could go for a couple of pancakes, and then what do? You got to
get it. Yeah, you can't get rid of me.
Yeah, that's the only way.
The guest wouldn't leave.
Now, you were just mentioning a school that you went to, which, now, what was this school you're talking about that teaches comics and whatnot?
A School of Visual Arts here in lovely Manhattan, New York City, USA.
Nice. Now, do you guys hate the Fame School? Were you guys the rivals, the Famers and the artists?
That's right. Juilliard versus SVA.
I think it was more of a Parsons. Two. You know, there was another art school.
Yeah.
It's Parsons, which was more a bit more
well-known.
Yeah, I guess I was going to say, like, well, not maybe well-known, but also just more, it seemed more highbrow, whereas SVA, like, you could major in cartooning.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You all had terrible football teams. Let's just admit that much.
Well, strangely, we did have a ping pong team. And the only, well, I don't know if it was a ping pong team, but they were having a ping pong championship against the school that's next door to us, which was a deaf high school. And I mean, I guess, you know, deaf, you don't need to hear to play ping pong. Anyone can do it. But it's just funny that, you know. Oh, yeah, I lettered in ping pong.
Yeah.
Totally kicked the deaf school's ass.
Well, the problem is the trash talking that's such an essential part of ping pong doesn't work there. So you really can't intimidate your opponent the same way unless you
neither of us
visual things.
Yeah, they can't intimidate me, and I can't intimidate him because, you know, he would trash talk me in sign language, and I'd be like, I don't know.
That's right.
Just, you can just tell by the tone.
But the way he moves his eyebrows.
Yeah.
So the School of Visual. So you went to school to learn cartooning. So that must have given you like a rich appreciation and understanding of cartooning. Going to school to study that.
No. I think I've learned more studying on my own than I did in school. Mm-hmm. I've never been a good student. I have kind of an adversarial relationship with teachers, and so I tend to have a kind of, you know, do the minimum amount of work required for classes. And at my art school, that was not difficult because it was very easy to just kind of, as long as you keep signing your name on a check to them, they don't care what bag.
That's most, well, not all schools. But the SVA has had some rather famous teachers, right? Like Harvey Kurtzman taught there of Mad Magazine and Mad Magazine, EC Comics. And then Will Eisner. Was there, right?
I did have Will Eisner as my teacher.
You had Will Eisner.
Was he the UFO guy?
No, he was not the UFO.
He's not a journeyman middling cartoonist. That was the description of the person.
I know, but that's how you throw us off.
Oh, okay.
And then we don't realize Will Eisner.
I'm thinking like it's Herb Trimp or something like that.
It's someone of a Herb Trimp caliber. It's somebody like that, like a Don Heck.
Don Heck. That was my next name. I was going to throw.
It's not like it's no one you probably have ever, you know.
I kind of
mentioned their name, you would not be able to recognize their artwork. Would not pop up into your head.
Okay.
Generic superhero work.
Hmm.
Oh, so did they teach you superhero stuff? Like, what was a day like it? Like, it fascinates me, art schools. I took theater because you had to take something after school or your parents would hate you. So I went, it was kind of mandatory. So I went to theater school. But what was a day like in an art school? What would you do?
Well, it's funny because the school now has, since the big graphic novel boom of the aughts,
yes,
yep, they are much more like arty oriented now. Like, you know, Tom Hart's a teacher there, Matt Madden's a teacher there. There's a bunch of people like indie cartoonist names teach there. But at the time when I was going there, it was strictly a superhero school. I mean, we had Joe Orlando as a teacher. We had Carmine Infantino was one of my teachers. You know, these workhorse Marvel and DC. Gene Colan was one of my teachers. And they all were like, you know, you're going to art school to learn to draw superheroes because that's where the money is.
Yeah.
You know, why would you go to art school to draw, you know, mini comics? So
it is a good question, actually. Why would you?
Yeah,
go
it
to
is
art
a great question.
Why would you go to art school to draw $2 photocopy?
Because art isn't about good judgment.
No, but I mean, art can exist outside of art school.
Yes.
when you make the choice to go to the School of Visual Arts to become a cartoonist,
yeah,
you've just invested a lot of money into a dream that, I don't know, seems kind of... I don't know, kind of odd.
You'd be a terrible dean, by the way, if that was your speech. A dream that, I don't know.
I don't know. What's,
well, good luck to you.
Why the hell are you kids here?
The check's cleared. Off you go.
Anyone here not drawing superheroes? Get out.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's. I always said that it's, I would tell a young person that if you have the discipline, take the thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars you're going to spend on art school and just take like a year and produce, like, you learn more producing 100 pages of comics than you do from 4 years of art school. You know what I mean?
Oh, I would think so, yes. Yeah, I agree.
Just by doing it.
And, yeah.
So yeah. That's what I would advise people today.
Now, when you were studying, what was the superhero world like then? Was that Image times or was that pre-Image?
Back in those days, Image had just broken on the scene, and there were all these crazy stories.
A young Rob Liefeld taught us all to dream.
You know, there were all these crazy stories about how, like, the Image guys were paying Chester Brown like $300 a page to do inks, and it just crazy. You know, they were throwing crazy amounts of money around.
Well, how, you know, what the problems they had with lateness? I actually think it was probably Joe Matt that they had doing inks.
That's true.
That little art alternative cartoonist joke for everyone out there.
Do you guys know? You guys know Joe Matt, right?
Oh yeah,
we have met him across
a couple
the table.
Of times.
Yeah.
Oh okay. Yeah.
And Seth.
And Chester Brown once cooked us a chicken dinner.
Yes.
Not that we're bragging.
Quite well, actually.
He took us upstairs and said, would you like to see my image work? We looked at his image work, went, nice. And then we went back downstairs and saw a noodle costume that was covered in spiders.
He was doing the Rob Liefeld one, Youngblood. He was inking that one.
He wasn't inking Youngblood.
No, he was.
Was he?
Remember? He had all the pages there.
Okay, well, I saw 1963 or whatever he was working.
That was not. Okay. Yeah. That's a little hipper. 1963.
I was just wondering, like, if it was, I guess it was a boom time then, so it made sense for people in a school to go, superheroes are the way it would be. That would make sense.
Well, what else was booming?
Nothing.
I mean, was it, I guess Hate was around then?
Love well, yeah,
the
there were.
There were wins that were, not Yummy Fur, obviously, but.
Well, the proportion of people at the school who were interested in stuff like Hate was pretty much the same proportion of people who read those comics in general.
Yes.
So in other words, like 1% of the, or actually now sadly, it's probably like 20% of the comics, you know.
Yeah.
So most of the people at the school weren't interested in that stuff. They all either wanted to be, there was a lot of bad Frank Miller ripoffs and a lot of bad Image, you know, that Rob Liefeld style of inking.
Yeah. So. If you want to see a bad Frank Miller ripoff, Dave, Dark Knight 2. That's a good one to check out. That's a good place to start.
Okay.
Now, were you doing mini comics before you went to the school, or was the school your fuck this, and then you went and you did the mini comics afterwards, or did you do it during?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it was the definitely like well, school's over, and unless I want to be working in a bookstore for the rest of my life, I got to start this cartooning thing off. And yeah, like I said, I worked, you know, pretty hard and well, although in retrospect, it was only like a couple of years. I think it was like 2 years before I got published. So it felt a lot longer at the time. But
no, that's a long time, depending on how much work you're doing. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you know, and of course, when you're 20, 25 years old, 2 years is a much longer chunk of your life.
That's right. Yeah, completely. Yeah, that can be forever. So yeah. So how many mini comics did you have? What did you have out before you got published?
Is this going to be like an interview type thing?
Oh, Jesus fuck. Is that a problem for you?
No, it's fine. I guess I was expecting.
Oh, my Lord. Look, we can,
I didn't expect me to be the focus.
We can be rumbly tumbly. We can go all over the map if you want. I'm just trying to get a little backstory, lay a little pipe, then we can jimmy jam off of it.
Okay. That's no, I just didn't.
Yeah,
fine. Those are all horrible images, by the way.
Alex, what's with all the fucking questions, Robinson?
That's right. Joining us today.
Okay.
The world's most secretive man.
No, I thought your show generally was more kind of like
okay.
Guys.
It is.
It is. It can be. But when we have a guest sometimes who's got, you know, an interesting background, we can, yeah.
Fair enough.
You know what?
Interesting seems stretching it, but I'll play it.
Look, I'll tell you where I was going with this. I was hoping at some point you might go, hey, fellas, I hear you guys did mini comics too. Maybe you turn it around and ask us a little something about ourselves.
Oh, okay.
But this dinner party seemed to be going one goddamn way. It's fine. It's fine.
It's fine. Man, someone has flipped his plate of mashed potatoes and left the table.
So anyway, wow, you did mini comics. You became a huge success, and that's the way it went. Anyway, UFOs.
Oh, another interview.
Gray or green aliens? What's your preference, Dave?
Green.
I'm going gray.
Alex, you're the deciding vote.
I don't see greens much anymore.
No, you really don't. Little Green Men seems to be a thing from the past.
That's why I like it.
It's more of a classic.
Yeah.
Well, I get the feeling with the Little Green Men situation is that's when color movies came out and then color TV came out. So you don't want to have an alien story and be showing the gray guy because everyone now thinks their TV's busted and they're seeing black and white again. Yeah. Dull. So yeah, you go for the Green Men, your purple people eaters, you get all sorts of colorful aliens. Yeah.
So now that we're in the era of HD, we're going with dull gray aliens as a choice.
I think you have to say dull gray movies. Oh, so many movies nowadays that have one color to them, which is a sort of weird monochrome of blue and steely gray. You know,
it's like true.
The Harry Potter movies or...
Yeah. Or you have your Super 8s where now, hey, forget that HD. I'm going to show you what it would look like through a Super 8 camera. Well, then why am I watching this on the HD screen? You're showing it through me through that.
Is that what Super 8 does?
I don't really remember. I was drunk when I watched it.
Well, that's a problem.
Sounds plausible.
That was a night that me and my wife decided we had a couple of bottles of wedding wine that we never got to, and they're up on the shelf, and we felt guilty and went, let's just drink one of these damn bottles and watch something. We watched Super 8, so we watched it drunk, and neither of us can really remember what the hell.
I thought you were joking.
No. I just remember a train, and then there's a monster, yep, and then I think monster. I'm just remembering Cloverfield after that point. I can't be really remembering.
Kind of morphed together. Are there drunk movies? You know how like you hear about stoner movies that you're supposed to watch when you're stoned? Are there drunk movies?
I would say
the Days of Wine and Roses.
I would say
not movies about drunk.
Oh, sorry. But you're supposed to watch those while you're drunk.
I'd say Cloverfield would be a good drunk movie because you always it would add to the drunkenness. Yeah. Yeah, because you'd never feel stable. Anything with a shaky cam, that kind of first-person perspective, like a Blair Witch Project would also work for a drunk movie, I think, because you can get drunk in the woods. That kind of works.
You seem to think the pleasure would be derived from the fact that it would be tricky when you think you were even drunker. Like, you know, like, whoa, I just had one beer and I totally can't even see straight.
Well, that's the point.
My cinematography's gone crazy.
That's the point of stoner movies, right? It's to take it the next level.
I always thought the point of stoner movies was this sort of half-assed comedy made better because the people are stoned who are watching it.
Oh, that's – well, you don't like Blair Witch, so I would assume that would work for you as far as that concerned.
That I would prefer to watch it drunk. Well, I'd like to watch it so drunk that I don't remember it. That's true, actually.
You won't. Even if you watch it, you won't remember it. You'll remember the ending. Yeah. And like if I was to ask you five facts of things that happened during Blair Witch, you would not remember.
Her nose is running while she's talking in the camera.
Oh, that's in the trailer.
A lot of screaming.
She unwraps a tongue.
I just remember her yelling, Josh, 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 1,000 times.
And he kept saying, my name's Roy. It was awkward every time.
Josh, I've got your tongue. But was Josh the cameraman?
I don't know.
I can't remember either.
I watched that on one of my first dates with Pia.
Really? That was a date movie?
Yeah, it was more, yeah. So it was more smoochy, smoochy, occasionally look at the screen, smoochy, smoochy.
Perfect movie.
And then I got scared by it because I get scared by everything. I went, I shouldn't have watched this movie.
I didn't find it that scary, actually.
So yeah, I did. I did about 11 mini comics.
Thank you for answering that question.
Let's get back to your question.
That's good, Ian. How many did you do? You did about 16 mini comics.
This ain't about me, Dave.
Well, I feel sheepish.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed. I did one mini comic. That's the most I could squeeze out of my.
And yours was, and your mini comic was just a harsh criticism of Alex's comic.
That's right.
You were the guy who did that thing?
That's right. That was
no,
me.
Actually, one guy who did was like a bit of a is actually in the same building we're at right now. Some guy, he gave not a great review of one of your books, which was completely stupid. But he is in this building we are in currently.
Oh, he works here?
He works here.
He works in the bookstore?
He works in the bookstore. Oh. There we go. So I'm just saying that. But when I read that review of your book, I thought, well, that guy's all kinds of fucking wrong. Done.
Do you know which review Ian's talking about?
There were so many. I don't.
I don't want to bring up bad memories, but it was one that was, it was like it was a stinkeroo, and it was like, well, this is completely, completely fucking wrong. And
Alex probably doesn't read his reviews.
Now I'm all paranoid that he's actually like in the room with you guys, and you're trying to beat me into like you know.
That's right. Say something bad about him.
He has burst into the room Kramer style in the past with some weird problem that I've had to like sit behind the desk and calmly talk him out of the room.
Lean away from him?
A little bit. Lean away and then just, do the thing. That is a goodly amount of mini comic. No, I did 18 issues of Y. I did,
you did 18.
Not wow, Y. Okay. I. My wife does Y. Yeah. I do I. It's confusing.
So when was the last time you did a mini comic?
Geez. I think probably the last mini comic I did was with Dave, and it was a jam comic called, it was our second issue of We're So Jar.
Yeah.
And Dave drew a story that I wrote. I wrote a story that Dave.
You drew a story that I wrote.
Yeah, words are difficult in our mouths. And we did that. And then we did one kind of autobio thing for each of us. Yeah. But I think that was the last one. How many years ago was that?
No idea.
Yeah. I've gotten back to doing some drawing for this podcast, sort of drawing recaps of things that we talk about just to try and get back on the horse. But drawing's hard. I don't know if either of you guys know this.
Yeah, I don't.
Drawing is really quite hard.
Yeah.
Well, I'm always impressed because I know you also do stage work. You're famous for your stage work.
Oh, I'm incredibly famous.
And I don't know how, I don't know how anyone who does performing would choose to do comics. Like, I know some people who are musicians and also do comics. And I'm like, why would you do comics if you could be a musician?
Well,
musician who people actually want to see.
Let me explain, Alex. It's working with other people. As opposed to, let me just get my own damn idea out on this piece of paper and no one's going, how about if, yeah, that's great.
I see.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Or I'm not getting enough focus. No, that's true. Okay, let's give you out of there. Yeah, it's the auteur. It's doing it all yourself and putting it out there. And if people don't like it, it's your fault. If people do like it, huzzah. But I remember when I was pitching my minis to be published, the publisher said, oh, we've already got Alex Robinson. I thought that was a good thing, as in, oh, then you like this kind of thing. And he went, yeah, so we're going to see how he works out, and then I'll let you know. And he never let me.
Is that Antarctic Press?
Yeah, that was.
How strange.
And I was thinking, he worked out pretty good. What the? Fine.
So
what Ian is saying is
he was hoping you would fail.
No, that wouldn't work for me either.
Well, no, that's right. Oh, it was bad all around.
But please continue, Alex. What were you going to say?
Well, I just felt sheepish about bringing up your comics because I have to confess I've never actually seen any of your comics.
Oh, you actually?
You know what I mean? Like,
how would
you? You're saying you haven't done them for years, and you guys, you know, I don't remember ever meeting you at shows, really. So I don't know. I don't want to say, oh, you know, what about your comics? I've never read them.
My story doesn't
sound like a jerk.
No, so. My story does not seem to hold water. When you hold me to it, it's clear that I'm lying.
Well, we were the West Coast scene.
Yeah.
Alex was from the East Coast. It was like rappers.
Yeah.
They just don't get along.
Also, we don't like to mail things because it's expensive.
That's true.
No, basically what I would do is I'd go down, like if I was at a con, we don't really do a West Coast con, so then I'd go to whatever the little shops and I'd drop my minis off there and make some sort of contacts there. If I'm in Seattle, do the same thing, or here in Vancouver. But it was tougher getting stuff into New York shops, you know. So they're really, I mean, and again, this was pre-internet, so how would you have seen my stuff unless you
subscribed to Factsheet 5 and ordered all the comics that were described therein?
I had some nice, you know, I got some nice reviews in the back of, you know, things like Cud or whatever, books like that. We got a little bit of that. Yeah. But yeah, it was difficult to actually, you know, find other mini comics, you know, around the world back then.
We got two great letters from, we got a great letter from Jim Woodring for our first We're So Jar.
A letter?
Yeah.
Wow.
I actually have one I did a comic called Rounders, and he wrote one for that one, praising my craft, which always seems sort of like a kind of roundabout compliment, you know. Really good drawings. But the other one was great because he described the way I drew him as looking like a Fleischer haystack, so... I've always liked that. I still have that letter.
So. Yeah, almost any of the cartoonists that wrote to us, like a Chester Brown or Seth or what have you, they would always do it handwritten.
Yeah.
Because I guess they were, you know, used to doing that kind of stuff. So those are all really kind of nice treasured letters. I got a nice one for a later thing I did. Ray Bradbury wrote me and he did a little cartoon as well. And it was just like, yeah, that kind of stuff's always amazing.
Yeah, my Dave Sim one, it's obviously, it feels like it's been dictated to someone while he was drawing, you know, it's kind of. Like it says, from one rounder to another, keep up the good work, Dave Sim.
I recently came across somebody asked you about Cerebus, and you had kind of like ambivalent, you uh, were quoted with some ambivalent thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep. Yeah. It was kind of nice, actually, because someone wrote a letter to, or wrote a comment on our website about one of our shows where we did talk about Cerebus and Dave Sim. And we were very, Ian's not as ambivalent as I. Ian is definitely.
I'm out.
Ian's out. Ian's
technically, I go like, man, that guy can draw. Man, that guy can write. So can a lot of other people. So I'm going to go over here for a while and I'll do that.
So Ian's not into it. But I'm more, yeah, kind of up and down about it, where I go, weird ideas, but, great drawings, great writing, great plotting. It's just great artistry, but it's kind of weird.
Well, I face a similar dilemma because I loved Cerebus when I was, when I was young and susceptible.
Yeah.
And so, he didn't go crazy until I was, not that he went crazy, but,
yeah.
he didn't start airing his more eccentric views, let's say,
yeah.
until I was well already, he'd already permeated my DNA, my drawing DNA. So
before he started, before he started calling women cunts for asking him to dance.
Is that what happened?
Yeah, there's one of the notes from the president where, this girl, normally I'd sit and I'd wait for women to ask me to dance because I will not ask them to dance. And if they are good looking, I will dance with them. But then this one woman came up and grabbed my hand and said, "Let's dance." And I went, "No, I do not want to dance." And she pulled my hand and dragged me to the dance floor and I had to dance with her. And she was a cunt, basically. Wow. Yeah. So,
that's a great story.
Thanks, Dave. Yeah, it's hard. It's kind of hard.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I don't want to connect the two together. I'm a fan of Ezra Pound. I like his poetry a lot. I know he was a anti-Semite who, did these anti-Semitic broadcasts in Italy. I'd rather not connect those two together. His art isn't the same as his personality. That I just don't want to.
But that's the difference between Dave Sim, is that he inserts, it's not separate.
There is separate. An element, yeah. There's an element of autobiography.
Before you read Cerebus, you had to read the dance lesson, story. And
to
then
be,
he.
To be honest, I did not really, I was not interested in that part of it. I didn't like that kind of rock star element of, I didn't read the letters column, for instance. I know that's weird.
No, it was kind
Cerebus
of rock
star. Cerebus is kind of short. So it's kind of, I remember when I was in grade 10, I read an article about Cerebus. In how in newspapers they used to have the weekend color section, that would have arts and culture kind of writing, and it had this article about Cerebus. Of course, this is Canada, so it'd be more likely to be shown. And it had that picture with I guess it wouldn't. This would have been before that. So it was this, but it talked about this comic, and it sounded really interesting to me because I was not interested in superhero comics, and I was always looking for something that was different. I loved Tintin, I liked Asterix and stuff like that. So I went to the comic book store. Found this comic, this thin comic that was $4. I looked at it where nothing happened. I just went, no, I can't afford this.
Do you remember which one it was?
It was one of the high societies, the one where the maid is goes down the hallway and looks in a keyhole. Mm-hmm. And I think Cerebus is talking to the elf at that point. I'm not quite certain. But
I think I just read that they're selling those pages as of today.
Oh, well, there you go.
I
should go and
say, I'm not interested in those either.
Make a bid on those. Yeah, I just... So,
but you eventually connected with the material.
Yeah, well, eventually, yeah, I started to collect comics. I had more money, and I got a job rather than a paper route, and started to have a disposable income, and started buying comics. And that was one of them I bought for quite a few years. I kind of quit around the time of Reeds, and not because I didn't like Reeds, but it was more I just quit buying all comics, not just Cerebus. I had moved out into a kind of rural area that had no. No nearby comic stores, and it was really difficult to keep up, the habit. So I stopped.
Yeah, I read Cerebus the same way I read Box Office Poison, which was started in the middle and then just randomly picked up issues and then tried to fill in the gaps and go, oh, how's this all work? And eventually eventually found the trades and filled it all in. But that was how I picked up Box Office Poison.
Yeah.
It was one of the books that I would regularly try to find in the back issue bins. And dug up and made sense of.
Yeah.
It's weird. Comics have kind of paralleled TV in that, because everything's readily available in, collections, wouldn't even occur to me to buy, let me buy issue 78 of this comic and check it out. I'd be well, I'm going to look at the first trade paper. It's I wouldn't start watching a show probably in like the second season, you know.
Though it is kind of better sometimes that way, because if you get issue 78, the artist has really hit their stride, is cooking. Whereas if you get issue one, it's that awkward. Ooh, the characters don't look quite right. They're really adhering to their formula and like get that plot exactly, you know. Whereas by 78, oh fuck it, loosey goosey, let's go to town and.
Yeah, it's true. I don't know if
they're in their stride.
I don't know if I would have liked Cerberus as much if I hadn't started.
Yeah, if you started with the barbarian issues.
Near the end of High Society, rather than than going back and going, oh, I'm just going to buy this Sword of Cerberus and read and then be like, what the hell is this garbage?
Do you remember that television program, The 4400?
Yes.
Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, they all 4400 people vanish and then come back.
I see it's available on Netflix, but I've never bothered to watch it.
Well, when I was at a comic show one time, and I was talking with one of the people who he was involved in the show, and he's like, oh, have you watched it? And I was like, well, I was curious about it, but I missed the first two episodes, so I'm going to wait till it comes out on DVD. And he was like, we make such an effort to make the show like accessible to new people, but everyone has that mentality of, well, I missed the first episode or the first two, and so I'm going to wait until I can watch it from the beginning.
Yeah.
That must be very frustrating.
I felt that way about Lost as well. I missed the first season, and then I just thought, what's the point?
Yeah. I said I was going to wait until the end to see what the reviews were like of the last episode. And everyone said the last episode sucked, so I'm like, well, that just saved me 3 years of watching
Lost. But they said that about The Sopranos, so you would have missed...
That's true. Although I think that I would have, if The Sopranos, I would have been better off if I'd stopped after like four seasons.
Is that right? It kind of starts to get a little.
I thought so, but it's been a while.
Well, the first episode of most shows is just too much exposition. Just too much.
Yeah, it's
too
a piloting kind of feeling. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people aren't doing what they're doing. It looks like someone who's just putting furniture in their house.
Yeah.
And you won't know what their house looks like until well in and they're all moved in and they got some junk on the on things. But you're just watching them shove that IKEA couch, and then it's not where it'll end up.
And if IKEA one, it gets all out of shape because you didn't tighten the screws enough, so it all kind of goes turns into a parallelogram as you're pushing on it. So
if I was running Hollywood, I would make every show film 22 episodes and then throw those in the garbage, and then like the first season would be really the second season's worth of shows, just so everyone would be all comfortable, Parks and Recreation, just
And they would call you. They would call you the man who bankrupted Hollywood. That would be your name.
Well, that would be the least of the things I mean.
Well, I'm watching on Netflix right now the House of Cards, the Kevin Spacey thing, and I like what they've done there, which is we're just releasing them all at the same time.
Okay,
because that's how you watch TV. So it's like, here's the series, here's all the series.
See, that's funny
at
you say that.
Once.
That's not how I watch TV. I mean, I do and I don't. I still watch network shows that run on this new annoying schedule. I don't even know what it is now. 4 months on, 4 months off, 4 months. Like, what is that? Do you remember when it was used to be like fall to spring, and then you had summer break, you had summer replacement shows, and then it was back on again.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like...
And there were only six channels.
Yeah, that's right.
Worry about everything.
Well, that wasn't so great, but just the whole... It's just annoying to me that
it was
shows
all
are gone.
Genies and witches.
Like, how do shows promote themselves now? They're gone for so long. Like, they just disappear.
Because that's not how people watch TV. You set your PVR, record only new episodes, and then you come home at night and go, "What did my PVR record? That I'll watch that." Huh. And that's how you watch TV now.
Wow.
Now you got to have the equivalent of that for comics, and we're going to be fine.
See, that's funny because I don't think of it that way still. Like, we have nights where we watch – because I don't like to watch television a lot. So we have nights where I will agree to watch television.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are nights that are set up that have shows on that we like. You know what I mean? So if Thursday night has a show on I like, then I'll watch TV on Thursday. But I won't watch it Wednesday or Tuesday.
Well, see, you're clearly not – if someone who's like, all right, I guess I'll watch TV, they're clearly not designing their model for you.
Well, as we described last week, Dave lives like the characters from Little House on the Prairie.
Okay. Yes. I live in a house in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. There's
packs
a cat.
Of plague-filled dogs roaming the – did you guys ever see that episode?
No.
No, I –
The plague
there's
dog
a, there's
episode?
A pack of rabid dogs roaming the countryside, and they wind up – and Laura Ingalls Wilder and probably her sisters wind up getting trapped in a barn, and underneath them is like 35 like foaming dogs like barking at them. I don't even remember how it ends. For all I know, they might have died in that episode.
They're attacked by Nellie Olson, who is the rabid dog.
Who's the biggest bitch there is. Queen of the bitches.
Now, here's my question about rabid dogs. Mm-hmm. Whenever you see the shows where it's like, the dog's rabid, how long does a dog live when it's rabid? Like, because you're scared of water, right? That dog can't last more than, what, 3 days?
It's scared of water?
Yeah, that's rabies, your hydrophobia. You're scared of water. Yes, rabies. Wait, yes. Really? Oh, for God's sake.
Is that what it is?
Yes.
I never knew
dogs,
that.
Yeah, rabies. If you've got rabies, you will not drink water.
Okay.
Oh, I want to look that up now
Well, it's possible. I mean, it's possible. Maybe.
No, that is true.
Thank Christ.
Okay.
Here's the thing, Alex. Every week, I state a fact. Yeah. David goes, mm-hmm. Well, that's in no way true. And we've got all the computers we could check this out on. And at end of show, I check. I'm right. And then we forget it by the next week and, you know, rinse, lather, repeat. Mm-hmm. But yeah, how long would a dog with rabies live? Like, just normally? Because it's traveling the countryside.
Why are you asking me?
It's on fucking tour, you know, with this group that's, you know, I think like 5 days tops, and then all you got is dead dogs in the desert. Wait it out.
Well, unless they keep adding new dogs
yeah,
as true. The old dogs die.
Oh, it's like Menudo. Right. It's like Menudo. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, right, exactly. Menudo is just, that's for their album, Rabid Dogs.
Yeah.
El Dogo Rabido, actually, is what it's called.
The thing that doesn't make sense about the whole rabies, it is, from what I've heard, Ian is correct, that dogs, you know, dogs were presumably a human with rabies, will not drink water. But is that like a mental thing where the dog's like,
I was thinking maybe
will it drink milk, for instance? Is it specifically water that it's?
I think it's afraid of liquids. I think hydrophobia.
Are you sure it's afraid of, or is its tongue swollen and it can't swallow, or?
No, I think it's fine. It can swallow your meat when it eats you.
I don't think it eats you. It bites you.
And then what? It just goes, done, walk away?
Yeah.
Well, that makes Cujo a quick film. Oh, no, he's getting in. Oh, he bit me. Well, yeah. I better go get those shots. The dog's walked away now. Done.
That's
no
why
problem.
90% of the book is them trapped in a fucking car.
Right. If he bit you and he didn't bite you anymore, then you leave and no problems.
That was the beginning of the end for Stephen King.
I don't think that's true.
What don't you think is true?
Wait, are you saying if the dog bites you and leaves, you're okay?
Yeah, because you get the shots in the stomach, like we learned from Fat Albert. You get a series of painful needles in the stomach, mm-hmm. and then you're fine.
Okay.
Although I don't think it necessarily eats you. I think it's just trying to kill you.
Yeah.
Oh, it's trying to kill you. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think
it's like, oh, I'm starving. I think it's just like aggression. And...
Yeah, it's this over the top aggression. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I like how we're piecing this together.
Later on, we'll Wikipedia this and we'll all be slapping our foreheads. Oh, is that what it is?
Now,
oh.
Here's what didn't make sense about it. Anyway.
The fact that I read it. That's what didn't make sense about that book.
I've only read two Stephen King books.
Really? Which ones?
I read Misery and this one, you're going to go On Writing.
Okay. I listened to the audio version of that. That was good.
And Writing was good, and I like Misery, but for some reason I've never read any other Stephen King books. Is it too late for me?
No, I read.
Yeah, you're too old now.
That's not true. The Shining.
No, you are.
The Shining is so easily readable. Just look at it; it'll just go into your head. You'll
but
be.
They're
fine.
They're like teenage books. Like that's when you really want to read those sort of books. They speak to the teenage mind. Like from grade 8 to grade 12, Stephen King, Yahoo, and then after that, it just became uninteresting to me. So I never read Misery. I think I read a bit of it because I do remember it being gory, whereas the movie I thought was better than the book because it kind of cut out the excess. But there was the horrible ones in a row. It was Christine, Cujo, Pet Sematary. I didn't like all three of those. And I just, after that point, I just kind of
Is Maximum Overdrive also an evil car?
It's a short story in Night Shift in the collection.
Okay, but is it about an evil car?
It's about machines.
I think it's all electronics.
Yeah, all mechanical things. Yeah, like tape. Table saws, blenders.
Because I just remember Stephen King, that was the trailer where he comes out and goes, I'm going to scare the hell out of you. And then you saw an evil truck coming at you. Yeah, and I thought, goblin on it. And I went he's moved up from an evil car to an evil truck. Mm-hmm. That's why it's going to scare us. And then later he got hit by a car, foreshadowing his own life.
Yeah.
I mean, he's done all this talking about cars and bad-mouthing cars. And then one car had enough of that shit. Whammo slammo.
I wanna call in Alex's expertise before we get too close to the end of the show, because on Ink Panthers, Alex, you in your alter ego as Colonel Wacky Bags, you are the novelty song expert.
I'm the Dr. Demento for the next generation. Probably two generations later, actually.
You and your co-host Mike Dawson, your co-host in Ink Panthers, you often get in arguments over what constitutes a novelty song.
Okay.
As far as I can tell, Mike Dawson thinks that all music ever written is a novelty song.
If it's at all catchy, it's a novelty
song. Okay, that's his criteria. Where I think you're a little stricter in your...
Yeah, I if you're going to ask me what the hard and set rules are...
No, I'm not... Okay. What I was thinking about the other day, I was thinking about story songs. Do you know what I mean?
Like you an American Pie or like an Alice's Restaurant?
Alice's Restaurant would be a good one. Okay. Or Mr. Bojangles would be another one. Not
well,
American
like
Pie.
Like Lola by the Kinks is kind of a story.
Yeah, it has like a... That's right. That's right. Yeah, a song that has like...
The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
There you go. Yeah, or... To be kind of more obscure, there's a song, Charlie Freak, on Pretzel Logic by Steely Dan.
The Night We Drove Old Dixie Down.
I don't know. I guess it might have a story. I don't – like. But to me, if it's a story, it
does
has –
does have a story.
It has to be – it has to have, like, characters. Do you know what I mean?
And a Boy Named Sue.
There you go. Yeah. It has characters and then it has
Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahassee Bridge. No, I'm just going to mention old songs.
See, that one does because it's people sitting at a table – talking about
something. Well, that's all the time we had for the show.
What? Ian's bored. As soon as you talk about music, Ian wants to leave the room.
I just wanted your setup to go so long that was the end of the damn show. But go ahead. Please continue.
No, I was just curious.
The Wreck of Edmund Fitzgerald.
That's one. There you go. That's one I had on
the
my
best.
List of things. Yeah.
Let's admit that's the best of the story songs.
Okay. I heard a great if I can interrupt for a second. Mm-hmm. I heard a great one of the Simpsons commentaries. They talked about how Gordon Lightfoot, who wrote that song, The Wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald, split up the royalties between the family members of all the people who died in the boat crash.
Wow.
You know what I mean? Like, the people who died on the Edmund Fitzgerald, their families get royalties from the song.
I had no idea. That's interesting.
And you're thinking, oh, that sounds cool that they get some money, but the guy said, but the problem is anytime someone wants to use the song in a movie, for instance, they have to get permission of all, like, 45 families. And as a result, they can never use it in anything because they can never get all of them to agree. So they wound up, like, kind of not getting – they didn't do a trust or anything. Each one individually has to give permission.
Oh,
so
that's
I don't want to interrupt your point, Dave, but I'm going to just tangent as we do.
Yeah, cool. Hurricane by Bob Dylan.
Sure, there you go.
Yeah, a friend of mine and I
Death of Hattie Carroll.
Wrote a song called The Great Saskatchewan Naval Disaster, and we looked into the rights of actually using that music, and we could not get
this
it.
Is too
but it was based on an actual naval disaster that happened in the prairies of Saskatchewan, where they had a little naval base, and they had a testing facility on the smallest body of water you've ever seen, and one of the boats sank.
It
is a true story that there was a naval disaster that took place on the prairies of Canada, and we just wrote a song about the Great Saskatchewan Naval Disaster and did it basically Gordon Lightfoot style.
Yeah,
yeah.
But you were...
Now, what does it have to do to qualify as a disaster?
We lost the boat.
Like misplaced it, or
you know what? On the sliding scale of bad things that have happened to boats in Saskatchewan, probably the worst. Probably will always be the worst. So if you're going to call something a disaster, that would be it.
It's a narrow field.
It's on a very wide field. Yes.
What are other story songs?
What other story songs? Are Rocky Raccoon? I would put that as a story song.
Yeah, I was going to go. The Beatles must have like some.
Drive My Car is the story song. Because it ends with a joke, right?
Yeah. So what was your point about story? What was your question?
I was just kind of thinking because
we love lists on this show.
Because I like to list things.
The podcaster's friend.
Because I was thinking how are they different from novelty songs? Do you know what I mean? Like you, one knows what I mean.
Laughter, joy.
Well, I don't know because
good fun times.
But some novelty songs have a kind of silliness.
Okay,
story songs.
Every song wouldn't end up on a Goofy Greats album. Every story song.
But Goofy Greats, for instance, are you familiar with Goofy Greats, Alex?
It's a song.
What's that? Sorry.
What's the song?
Are you familiar with the KTEL album collection Goofy Greats?
No, but I can imagine what it is.
Okay, very good.
Well, it's actually kind of interesting because it did have some not like true novelty songs like Ahab the Arab. Or Guitarzan by Ray Stevens, and had Purple People Eater on it, and Rockin' Robin. But it also had Dirty Water by the Standells, and had Money Money by Tommy James and the was it the Shondells? Is that their name?
And Yummy Yummy Yummy.
It had Yummy Yummy, which is a bit more. But when those songs came out, they weren't meant as novelties. They were just aimed at preteen. They were aimed at the teenage or the preteen sisters of people who were into Led Zeppelin.
Oh, Yummy 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 was a very serious song at the time.
Oh, yeah. So it was taken very seriously.
Yeah.
There's the whole...
That had love in their tummy.
Yeah, that was about the Bay of Pigs.
I love that song, and I was so excited when it was in a Monty Python episode. That just seemed so great to me that song was...
Now, your question, though, for Alex is what? If you could sum it up in a question.
Garthel's novelty song.
Yeah, are story songs novelty songs?
I think if you're going for... this is the thing about... I think there needs to be a point system in place where if you have X amount of points, if you tell a story... Obviously, not every story song is a novelty song, but if it's... It definitely can, let's say that's worth 2 points, having a story.
Okay.
Like, a funny story, like a Boy Named Sue is just a straight-up novelty song.
Yeah.
So, anytime you're going for laughs, I don't know. It's tough.
It is tough. I was just thinking about it. I just thought we could talk about it a little bit. Ian doesn't want to talk about it, though.
No, I'm fine with it.
He's like, oh, music, Dave.
No, I'm fine with it. I like you being able to talk about music.
It's like an old married couple.
Right before the murder.
Lola by the Kinks, spoiler warning, this gentleman goes to a bar, meets this woman, brings her, goes back to her. Lola is actually a gentleman.
Yes.
And this guy's totally cool with that, man. And so is that a novelty? Is that like a punchline kind of a thing where it's a...
It kind of, in a way. I mean, it's the same with Drive My Car, whereas, the song, the person realizes or reveals that he doesn't have a car. And, he wants the girl to get him or he wants to use a girl's car for, And you know what's weird?
Well, I think the girl is the singer, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, I guess that's right. That's right, yeah.
The girl is the one who is saying, hey, drive my car.
Yeah. The other interesting thing is Norwegian Wood. What the Beatles meant in that song was that the guy lights the apartment on fire at the end of the song.
What? I never picked up on that.
Yeah, me neither. I never, but I was reading, they're talking about.
How many of the Beatles songs are about murder?
I don't.
Maxwell Silverhammer, murder.
Yeah.
Why don't we do it in the road? Which, again, you'd just be murdered by being run over by a truck.
That's more like
Rocky Raccoon. Murder.
Yeah, rabid raccoon. Yeah, he's a rabid raccoon.
There's that song that John sings, I think, on Hard Day's Night, where he says something about he's going to kill that girl if she comes home. It's such a. I can't remember how the lyrics are.
Yeah, they're all murder songs.
It seems rather violent, though, when you listen to this peppy album of songs. Then
yeah, the only song that wasn't about murder, ironically, Helter Skelter.
That's right. It's about a roller coaster.
Yeah. That was it.
Actually, technically, that was about manslaughter, so subtle difference.
Because when they did Rubber Soul, their idea originally was to do an album of humorous songs. That was original. That's what their kind of mandate was as they started writing it. But, when you start doing that, you quickly lose inspiration and then it just becomes something different. But that was why they had Drive My Car and Norwegian Wood, where originally the idea was they're going to do all these songs that were kind of amusing or funny. And then I guess they probably realized that was not a good idea. No one's going to get these jokes.
Whatever happened to the Beatles after that?
They did Revolver, the greatest album of the 60s.
Okay, we've been over that. That's fine.
What's the best Beatles album? You're a big Beatles fan, aren't you, Alex?
I am.
I thought so.
What's the best Beatles album? Abbey Road is my favorite.
Oh, is that right? Abbey Road. Interesting choice. Why?
Yes.
Why?
I don't know. I think I think it's a good balance between, production. I like it's very smooth sound to it that I like, very polished.
Okay.
And, you got the medley. I'm not actually, ironically, Something by George Harrison is one of my least favorite. That song I don't even like, so.
Is that right?
That's my least favorite song on the album is Something by George Harrison.
But you still have that in your, to be fair, Revolver, which is my personal favorite, has one of those George Indian songs you're kind of like, ugh, enough. Yeah. Once is enough.
Dave's a little bitter towards Abbey Road. One day we had a Beatles rock band playing and he had to sing an entire side of the album.
I had to do the medley.
Didn't realize the whole thing just went on and on. And by the end of it, he was just wheezing. He's not a young man.
Her Majesty's a pretty fucker.
Yeah. He started singing way too high. And it was...
It's a problem. It's a problem. So, Alex, I'm such a huge Beatles fan. I buy any Beatles book I see that looks halfway decent, I'll buy it to read it. Mm-hmm. And I have my holy grail, which is the Beatles at Abbey Road, the complete recording session. That's one of my personal favorites. Right. Have you read that one?
I have that one.
That's a great one. And then another great one is Revolution in the Head by Ian MacDonald. Have you read that?
Yeah, I got that one too.
Those are great. And then the other one I like a lot is Beatles Gear. It's called, which is just all about the instruments.
Yeah, I got that one. So what?
What I'm saying is we're Beatles nerds. Nerds. In fact, I have three versions of Revolution in the Head because I had to buy the updated one that had the stuff about real love and and the other later songs.
Which is, of course, essential. You could not have a book about that.
I had to have it. So I had to buy it again.
Okay, let me ask both of you guys. Mm-hmm. Who is the fifth Beatle?
George Martin.
Okay. And what do you think?
I was going to say Murray the K.
There we go.
Self-declared. Who, yeah. John calls a wanker in the film of their first tour.
That just, again, I've mentioned this before today, but that always makes me think of this weird Superman story where Clark Kent goes to England and becomes Clark the K DJ.
Makes sense, though.
Because he's got to, like, know what the news is going on, and mm-hmm. he tries to get a job at a news station, and the only job is being a DJ. All right. And he becomes Clark the K, and he becomes the most popular DJ in all of England, but has to play songs and then go save people and be back before the music ends. And it was a good little story.
I like their.
What's that, sir?
Sorry, you say, Alex.
I was gonna say, where did the story appear?
It appeared in a comic called Superman.
No, but I mean, like,
I believe
like in 1952, in 2007.
I believe this was late 60s, early 70s. I read it in a DC Digest comics called. It was basically, the idea was Clark Kent's other jobs. So it was all the other jobs Clark Kent has had over the course of Superman comics, and one of them was DJ. I can't tell you the exact issue, but I can look it up for you at some point.
Okay. I was just trying to get the era down, whether this was, you know, more Weisinger era silliness, or whether this was like the new, cooler Superman.
It was cooler. This is about the time that kryptonite wasn't working anymore on him. Okay. That brief period of time where he just went, hey, fuck kryptonite. And that was the end of it. And then they went, we should really bring kryptonite back. And then they brought kryptonite back. But it was about that time period, I think. Yeah.
It's actually a
Frank Miller
story.
So they're trying to make him seem young. And it'd be like he would be a blogger now.
Yeah, he had a better. He had a. Yeah, that's right.
That's
he would have a podcast.
There you go. Whoa, that's the height of hipness.
When does Superman, like, when does he decide, okay, you know what, I'm done today? You know what I mean? Isn't there always stuff to be done as Superman, especially if he's doing stuff like getting cats out of trees and stopping, you know, like.
Well, let me tell you my bigger problem with Superman, which
What's
is.
What's your problem, Ian?
Let me tell you, Alex, let me lay this down
What's
on you.
What's the deal with Superman?
All right. I assume at some point when you've stopped this alternative comics bullshit, you'll be writing Superman. So remember this when you're doing that job, because that's where it all ends up.
When you're the next Grant Morrison.
That's right. He could do worse. Superman has his Fortress of Solitude. Inside his Fortress of Solitude, there's like dozens to hundreds of Superman robots. All of these robots have Superman's powers.
Yes.
They all have strong. They got the flying, whatever.
Okay.
Hey, how about getting those guys patrolling the world and saving some people? How's that sound? Because they're all smart. They can all talk. They can all, you know, react to things. And you've got them all locked up in your little mountain fortress. What's up with that?
They're all terribly immoral.
Are they?
These robots, do they look and act the same way as Superman? Like, are they indistinguishable from Superman?
Yes. In every way, you would not be able to tell. This is Superman. So you just, like, send them out and the time.
Are you sure, though? Like, would they have, like, the ability to, like...
Judge?
Not just to judge.
Love.
To love? Would they be empathetic? Would they be able to, like, you know, to decide... rationally.
Okay, you send one of them
with
up.
An emotional, you know what I mean?
Like, okay, first of all, let me just do this, and I'm sorry to cuss in front of Alex, but fuck emotion for a second. Put one of them on asteroid duty. Punching asteroids. One dude.
Why?
Up there, punching asteroids.
What?
One guy. Because there's nothing emotional about it.
What is an asteroid to you?
Is an asteroid? Well, one's going to crash into Earth. You punch it.
Why?
Because it's going to kill people.
But
he's always punching asteroids.
Where is this asteroid?
It's coming at us. Have you read a Superman comic? There's always an asteroid coming at us. Okay. It's like, I got to go. Punches an asteroid. Comes back down. Where were you, Clark? Get one damn robot up there on asteroid duty. Get another on tidal wave duty, freezing waves when they're about to kill people.
How about just a lifeguard? How about just a lifeguard?
Yeah, he could be a lifeguard.
Yeah.
The basics.
Crossing guard.
Yeah, crossing guard.
Well, he's a lifeguard.
Superman's all across the world.
Well, I'm thinking, like, as a lifeguard, all he has to do is blow the water and freeze it, and then he can go lift it up and take the child out.
Would that really be a better solution?
That sounds terrible. Why not he just take a big giant pole, plunge it through the child's chest, lift him out of the water, and then set him down on the ground?
Well, if you got
then spin the earth backwards.
Yeah.
He comes back to life, and then don't let him go in the water.
Well, guys, there's no need for that. Let me tell you why. Because Superman right now is dating Wonder Woman. She's got the purple healing ray. He just asks Wonder Woman, can I use the healing ray? Boom. Kid's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Purple ray.
You know what he needs a purple ray for?
What's that?
Chafing.
I love that Prince album, Purple Ray.
Purple Ray.
Wow.
Let's talk. Don't even start to judge me. I got all your podcasts. I got them all downloaded. I can listen to them all. I can go.
So you know what they should just do? Here's your easy solution. The robots are doing all that stuff, except you just don't know about it.
Oh, that's a good point, because Superman doesn't brag.
Yeah.
Oh, that
just, you know, every now and then you should show him go up to the upper stratosphere, and he's like, you know, Superman Robot 433, and he's, you know, it's kind of talk like Bizarro. Oh, Superman, me smash asteroids.
Oh, well, that's what you do, too. You tell Bizarro, hey, Bizarro, listen, whatever you do, buddy, don't smash asteroids that are about to hit Earth, because I love me some asteroids. And Bizarro goes, I know what to do. And then Bizarro's up there smashing asteroids for you. Just trick that guy. Keep him busy.
Wow.
See?
Well, you need to do something that would be even, like, require, like, either that would totally destroy him, or it would just keep him busy for, like, eternity. Like, you know. Oh, Bizarro, there's, you know, Lex Luthor is on the sun. Go grab him for me, you know, and then Bizarro would go fly into the sun or something. Does Superman hate Bizarro anymore? What's the deal? Is he still a bad guy or a dumb guy?
Bizarro's a tough one, because Bizarro seems like when they do Bizarro wrong, I think it seems like he's mentally challenged. And so you feel like, well, why are you punching this guy? Just put him in the damn Phantom Zone. Like, just send him away.
First of all, we all know the mentally challenged are stronger than normal.
That's why Bizarro has a strength. He's not from Krypton. No. He's just very strong.
Yeah.
We're all fists and elbows.
Is Bizarro from Krypton?
No, he isn't. Oh, okay. No, he's not. There's various origins for Bizarro.
Okay.
None of them are. He's from Krypton.
As I said earlier, I was never a superhero fan, so this is all this mysterious talk.
Though I always love Bizarro World, the idea that there's one planet out there that's square-shaped. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Sure. How does it work?
Bizarro World, it wouldn't last for 10 minutes. How would a functioning government operate on Bizarro World?
Well, it doesn't have to 10 minutes. You just rebuild the world afterwards. It probably does get destroyed every 10 minutes. Who cares? A bunch of Bizarros.
And you know who builds it is the people who do demolitions on Bizarro World.
that's right. It's one giant racket.
Yeah, it's built by a wrecking ball.
That's why it's still there. It's just a giant racket.
Well, this was a thing they used to do in the old Superman days, was everyone got their own damn planet. Like Lex Luthor had Lexor.
That's because they're Mormons.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. So Lex Luthor had Lexor and Brainiac. There was Kalu, whereas all the Brainiac people were on. And like everyone got
Kalua?
Yeah, it was Kalua.
That's where the liquor is.
Yeah, everyone got their own planet at some point when they completely ran out of ideas.
Wow.
Yeah.
And ask your doctor about prescription Lexor. Side effects include boldness.
Musk-hating Superman. Illogical revenge fantasies.
And sadness.
Oh, Luthor. He lost his hair.
It's weird that both the Superman movies, or Superman, the classic Superman, and then Superman Returns, both involve Lex Luthor in complex real estate. Like, I'm going to build an island in the middle of the ocean. I'm going to destroy is that his theme that he's into, like, planet shaping?
The one thing I liked about Superman Returns is when Lois sneaks onto whatever, his boat or something, mm-hmm. and he's not ready for her, and I think he's brushing his teeth, and she just walks in on him, and he's just like, huh? And it's just like, that's great that the villain in no way is ready. He still has to take a leak. He's going to take a shower. It's just mourning for him, and she's like, oh, all right, I guess I gotta tie you up. Spits in the sink, has to go deal with all this.
But you're
right about the real estate thing. It is a long way around for a villain. That's a strange. It all involves sinking. Isn't it sinking like California? And so then he gets some beachfront property, and it's worth a lot of money.
Yeah, he's going to use the missile to hit the fault, right? And
right.
Cause the California to drop. I think, as if that would work, by the way, but.
Yeah, that's a bad plan.
That's the only implausible part of that.
Well, my biggest problem with supervillains
that's
in general is...
That's my biggest complaint about that film.
It's like, say you're the Rhino, okay? And you always have the Rhino robbing a bank. And you're like, the deal with the Rhino is Rhino can't take the suit off. So Rhino's always the Rhino. He doesn't like put a hat on and now he's Phil Rhinoplasty.
Why is your hat sitting so high above your head?
What do you mean? I'm very excited. But what I never understood was like for most supervillains is why do you need money? Just like whatever you want, take the thing you want. Like I want to buy a car. Just take a car. I want a house. Kick the people out. You're the Rhino. Take their house. Whatever you want. You got a middleman here system that you in no way need, much like Lex Luthor and his real estate scheme.
Are you a genius. Are you the Rhino or just happy to see me?
Wow.
I heard they're trying to get Paul Giamatti to play the Rhino in the new Spider-Man.
I think you might not be wrong.
You're not. Oh. They're going to use a rhino? I guess they use a lizard, so.
Rhino
they're
is
keeping
the,
an animal theme.
If you've ever played the video games for Spider-Man, Rhino is always villain number one, and the way you beat the rhino, jump.
Yes, and then he runs into a wall?
Yeah, and then when he's stuck, you just pound him in the spine until he's crippled.
Nice.
And he
well,
wheels
rhino
out.
Always seemed kind of like a pawn. He's a pawn kind of a villain. Like, the rhino's on the rampage. Why? And then it turns out that someone is manipulating the rhino, you know, is tricking the rhino or using the rhino somehow. He's just kind of like a dumb, like a sap kind of a character.
Well, and also bugged me too that you had the rhino, and then over in the X-Men you had the Juggernaut. And like, what's his power? He runs, and then he hits his head into stuff. I mean, like the rhino? Yeah. Okay. You guys should talk. You know, both teams, like invented by the same dude. Just like, okay. You know, both were, you know, just run. Then also, you got no problems if you're the X-Men and the Juggernaut's there. He's just running at you. Well, fly out of the way. No problems at all.
They,
done.
Can they all fly, the X-Men?
Eventually. You know, or ask a guy who can fly to take you up.
Okay.
Because your friend can fly and he can carry you. So yeah, you're done. No problems. Done. And they always had to trick the Rhino and Juggernaut into running into cement or into the ocean or something. And then they'd drown. But then
they would freeze the ocean and he'd be stuck in it.
Because Superman was the lifeguard.
With six or seven children. They're frozen corpses.
You just have to hope you're not underwater when Superman pulls his little trick.
These little children, motionless, stuck in place.
Well, I always wondered that when I was a kid, because he always had those villains that would freeze you, right?
Yeah.
And you'd freeze you in a block of ice. And it was like, it's okay. He doesn't kill. Like, I think you're dead. You're dead, aren't you? Like, wouldn't you suffocate?
Can't breathe.
Well, or is the deal that you then, with like hypothermia or whatever it is, like your heart rate slows down enough that when we take you out of there, you're going to be fine? Is that the idea?
I think the answer is comic books.
Nowadays, they always like then push the thing over and you watch the guy smash into pieces and you're like, clearly dead. Understood. Everything's fine.
No, he's still alive. He's so frozen. When he thaws, he'll be really sore.
Yeah, you got just that short period of time to assemble jigsaw style before he thaws.
Yeah.
Oh, I like it.
Put a little bit of spit on each end of the ice thing.
Crazy glue.
That's how we save Wolverine. He'll heal, but you got to put him together right. Otherwise, it'll really be awkward.
That's right.
Somebody said there was once a story where Wolverine was blasted to the point where he was literally just an eyeball. And then he regenerated from that.
No, not just an eyeball. He was like
eyelash.
No, it wasn't even an eyelash. I think he was like one drop of blood. And then he regenerated.
That seems a cheat.
It is. But to be fair, at the time, there was some sort of cosmic force that was also involved in that. So normally your basic Wolverine will not be able to do that.
Without divine intervention.
Yeah. Well, my thing is, if like, say you really fuck up Wolverine. Like, there's times that you almost kill Wolverine completely and you just see most of his skeleton. What if at that point you just pull the skeleton out? And does like the fleshy bit just regenerate with no skeleton inside? Or does it regenerate with a skeleton inside but it's a regular skeleton?
You're holding the skeleton. It regenerates around your arm. Ooh, so now your arm is inside Wolverine.
Oh, I like it.
Wolverine puppet.
Well, they got the
it's
new
like a tree where if you put something, you know, if you bind part of him, he would grow and he'd have this like ring where his flesh was all smushed together.
Like a bicycle around a tree. Yeah. Guys, we are wasting our time with this alternative comics crap. We are clearly the best superhero writers ever been.
Mundane funnies. Here we come. What do you mean we should have exciting stories about Superman? Why don't just a bunch of stories about robots being crossing guards and lifeguards and punching asteroids? Meanwhile, Superman, disguised as Clark Kent, can work at his job and date Lois happily. I'm ready.
I always liked the very first issue of Spider-Man, the amazing adult fantasy. Not adult fantasy. It was just amazing fantasy. Well, no, you're laughing, my friend. But I will. Let me chastise you.
I'm liking it.
The issues 1 to 14 were called Amazing Adult Fantasy.
Really?
And then Amazing Fantasy was issue 15, and that was the first issue that Spider-Man showed up in. So shut up.
No,
okay. But on the cover, it's like the world may laugh at timid Peter Parker, but wait till they get a load basically of Spider-Man where he's carrying the guy. But you just told him you're Peter Parker. Good job. Good first day on the job, idiot.
quickly, once he realized he could drop that guy to his death.
That's right.
Didn't make any difference.
Who's laughing at Peter Parker now?
He didn't seem off him.
Yeah. And I always want to see the first villain who just went, let's find out who Spider-Man is. Okay. Why don't we just follow these webs, see where they're leading? They're clearly leading in one direction. Oh, that house. Oh, the Parker home. Okay. well, let's kill him. The end.
Well, yeah, it was always weird because, like, you know, Spider-Man would be knocked unconscious and there'd be the scene of the villain being, now I finally get to see who he is.
Yeah.
But even if they did, it's not like they'd be like, oh, it's famous high school student Peter Parker. You know, they'd just be like, oh, some kid. I thought it was going to be someone famous.
I thought it was going to be Errol Flynn. Why is it just Peter Parker? I thought Errol Flynn was Spider-Man. All the signs were pointing to John Wayne as Spider-Man.
If I was Peter Parker, here's what I'd do. I would, before I put on the mask, I'd put on like a disguise. Like I'd wear like a, put on like a mustache and some crazy facial neck tattoo and some other stuff and maybe put in some contact lenses, a wig. So when they pull the mask off, they're like, ah, now I know exactly what you look like.
It's Frank Zappa. He's Spider-Man.
Oh, Frank Zappa would have been a great Spider-Man.
I guess.
So what was
wear a series of masks underneath?
He'd be onion Hugo, head
kind of a concept.
Hugo, man of a thousand disguises.
Do you remember
that toy?
Of course, I remember Hugo.
I had it.
Yeah, it also looked like Hugo, chemotherapy patient.
Oh, I used to love Hugo. I'd be terrified of him at the same time.
The smell of him was terrifying. Is this weird plasticky rubber smell that permeated your bedroom wherever you had Hugo in there, and you got to glue on his scars?
And then
that's why he couldn't sneak up on you. Gave him a distinctive odor.
Yeah, because he could be anybody. You don't know who Hugo is.
That's right. My mom just made me clean my room up, and then you walk in the kitchen. You're here.
What was the idea behind Hugo? What, did he have a backstory, or was it just like dress him up? Was he a spy?
Yes, he had a backstory.
I don't know.
An elaborate backstory that you read. It came with a 250-page novel. Was in the box with Hugo.
I think this is before every single toy was tied in with a TV show series of books. It was just kind of like, hey, let's let kids use their imagination as to what Hugo's deal is.
what is his deal?
It just said that on the back. What's his deal?
What's his deal? You decide.
Is he in a bad marriage? Is he trying to sneak out? Did he do something terrible in the war? You decide.
Hugo, the man with a thousand tax problems.
Let's play witness protection. Hugo really needed Mrs. Hugo and like baby Hugo that you could have dressed all of them up.
I loved his wigs because they're so unconvincing. They're like a bird's nest.
Though, you know, that would be the kind of wig that no one would bother you. They wouldn't be dicks about it.
I guess.
If we could just pause for a second, I kind of have to get running.
Oh, okay, yeah, you got it.
Sure.
So I don't know if we want. I have to go record my own podcast.
Oh yeah,
so
okay.
Absolutely fine. You have
closing
been
closing thing.
You have been incredibly generous with your time.
We should do a crossover episode where Mike and I guest on yours, and then you guys. We just immediately segue into our podcast.
Hey, that'd be fun.
Sure. Sounds good. That sounds like a great empty promise. Let's see if that happens. Okay.
Oh.
What's that?
Hey, I've had 50% of the Sneaky Dragons on our podcast.
Absolutely have. So, it was a real treat
wrong
to be on
50%.
Your show. Well, let's get to pluggy plugs right now. We weren't allowed to talk about your past because you're ashamed of it. But your present right now, is there anything that's out in the shops with your name on it that people should be looking for?
Nope.
Fair enough.
You are working on something.
You're
you?
A promo machine.
I've been working on a graphic novel. I'm about 110 pages in, and I hope to have it done this year. Okay. We shall see.
All right. I'm going to say, if you're in the shops, pick up your box office poisons. You're tricked. You're too cool to be forgotten. What was the Santa's Been Kidnapped book you did?
And Others.
And Others. Okay. Again, the guy does not like his own work. He's his own worst critic. When I was mentioning that critic before, the actual person that wrote that review, Alex Robinson.
Oh, wearing my Hugo disguise and my alter ego as a comics writer.
We'll do our own plugs really quick here. Dave and I are going to be at two comics festivals this year, Vancouver Fan Expo, Vancouver CAF, VanCAF will be at that. And I'm going to be at the Emerald City Comic Con performing with my D&D comedy show, Critical Hit Show. So if you want to come and see that, come and see that. And so on and so forth. Listen to The Irrelevant Show. My sketches are on there. Simpsons Futurama Comics is what I do. Anything you want to plug, Dave?
Nope.
All right. Thank you so much, guest Alex Robinson. We hope to talk to you again soon. It was a treat and a half to have you on the show.
Oh, it was a blast.
Okay. Take care and listen to his podcast, The Ink Panthers Podcast.
Lots of
coming
fun.
Up right after this.
That's right. On this station. Thanks, Alex.
Bye. The two rudest guys in the world. Yeah, okay.